Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is Beyond Relief. And the numbers to call to get coaching on having what you want and thriving in every area of your life are 866-254-1579, toll-free in the United States and Canada. That's 866-254-1579. Outside the U.S., you can reach us by dialing your country code, generally 001. Actually, that's my country code, 001-760-918-4300. And as always, I'm going to take a little time to set the table before we go to the phones. First thing I want to say is thank you oh so much, Margaret and Reed from Hay House, for nominating me for the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge. If you would like to see my response, those of you following along at home, you can go to my Facebook, facebook.com/mneal, and you will see my video response to the Ice Bucket Challenge. What do I mean when I talk about beyond relief? I want to share in a way today something that's been a big learning for me. And I think the reason that it was a big learning for me, you know, because some of you might hear this and go, duh, Mike Neal didn't know that. I knew that. Is that because that's the voice you have in my head when I think of you making fun of me. One of the things that I just didn't see is that for me, I've lived so much of my life in a noisy mind, in a busy mind, in a swirl of thinking, that when I accessed a more meditative state of mind, a quieter mind, a more reflective state of mind, it was such a relief that I really didn't want to do anything in that state of mind other than enjoy it. It was like, you know, it was like going to the beach. It didn't want to think about anything. I didn't want to have to do anything. It was a relief to be in that state of mind. And as such, I really valued it. And anything that seemed to help me in being in a more meditative, you try saying that three times fast. Anything that helped you be in a more meditative state of mind more often seemed like a good thing. And then as I began to learn the principles that we talk about on this show, and I began to understand that that quiet mind, that innate well-being, it is innate. It is part of our nature. It is part of who we are at core. It's a part of who's looking through your eyes and listening through your ears right now. I wound up spending more time in that state, and it became less of a relief simply because I was spending more and more of my time there. And that's when I began to realize that when you're in that quieter state of mind, you're also in a state of sort of optimal creativity. And that kind of optimal creativity is available for problem solving, but it's also available for possibility generation. It's just a space into which new thought naturally arises. And a lot of that new thought comes through us and to us from our deeper mind, from a deeper wisdom, from a deeper part of ourselves. And that's not something for you to do. That's not something you have to learn how to do, how to practice, although there are a lot of techniques out there that try to teach you that as a technique. When you start living more in a quiet mind, when you start living more in a beautiful feeling, one of the things that will naturally begin to occur is you will get more fresh thought. You will get more creative ideas. You will get more insight into things that have troubled you in the past. And that's one level beyond relief. It's not something you have to do. It's not something you have to practice. It is a natural effect of allowing the mind to rest more in its natural quieted down state, in its settled down state. Now it gets even better. Don't order yet, kids. But with your meditative state of mind that is natural, that you don't have to do anything to get, that is what is left when you stop with all the noise of trying to fix your state, think better thoughts, do better things, be a better person. In the quiet that is sitting around that all the time, and that is all that's left in our consciousness when our personal thinking settles down, we begin to experience a deeper connection with spirit, with universal intelligence, with the universal mind, with God, with whatever it is that is behind the scenes of life, the energy and intelligence behind life. That naturally is what is left in that space when you've gone past just the relief from all the noise, and even past the creative ideas and possibilities and fresh thought that comes into that space. Ultimately, beyond relief, is a deeper experience of our true nature, our spiritual nature. And that's kind of cool, right? That's when I talk about the kindness of the design, even though I know I'm making it up, that there's a kindness to it, because that would suggest that there's somebody's thinking about it. I don't know, maybe that'd be cool, but I don't know anything about that. But boy, do I experience it that way. I mean, how cool is that? That the less I do to fix my life, the less I work on my thinking, the more I'm able to just be in my experience and with my experience, in my thinking and with my thinking, the more that thinking settles down, the more relief I feel at first, you know, relief from stress, release from stress, the more creativity and innovation I get to experience. And ultimately, the deeper connection to life, connection to God. I've been using the phrase a lot lately, awakening both our divinity and our humanity. Awakening both to spirit and to heart. Relaxing into your spiritual nature and relaxing into your human nature. And allowing both to be present, because both are present. And we ignore either at our peril. So that said, we're going to go to the phones. If you want to get in, numbers to call 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. Outside the U.S., 001-760-918-4300. And let's begin in New York, New York, with Naomi. Hey, Naomi, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I try to listen almost every week. I really like the way you coach, and it's like very sensible, and it makes sense most of the time you like answer people. So I really like you. All right. So going to my question, I want to know, how do I find my passion? I feel like I'm all over the place, and I can't get myself to organize myself, and I need like a suggestion or help on that. So
what do you mean by organize yourself?
Okay.
Because I can help with that. The head goes at the top, then the shoulders, and then you want the arms kind of dangling down from there. But I'm guessing that's not what you mean.
I don't know how to do that. I'm joking. So let's say, I'll give you an example. I'm going to school and I want to learn psychology. And then in the time being, I feel like, oh my God, I don't have a job. And I'm like, I need money, but then I want to go through doing what I like. And then it's like all over the place. I'm like, okay, if I don't do this, how to organize myself in a way of, I don't know how to, let's see, put it down.
Let me jump in early, and then you can guide me as to which bits I'm picking up of what you actually mean and which bits I just made up.
Okay.
How about that?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Okay. So let's start with one premise that you didn't say, but it kind of underpins the question. And it's, hey, shouldn't I be able to make my living doing what I love? Right? Can you hear that question is kind of underneath
right. What
you're saying?
Right.
And the answer is sometimes. Right. I don't know at what point the idea entered the culture that some of us get a free pass. And I'm not picking on you because this is not what you've said and this is not the way you've said it, but this is kind of a cultural thing that underpins our search that we don't even notice because we're part of the culture.
Right.
And it's this idea that somehow we should be able to, you know, have all good and no bad, that we should be able to do what we love and get well paid for it. And that if we don't, there's something wrong with us or there's something wrong with the system. Now,
okay.
Understand, I think it's fantastic in those times where I'm able to do what I love and make money doing it. I love that. That's great. And I live on a planet in a society that doesn't always enable the timing of that to work out with my timing. So sometimes, and this is was more true earlier in my career than it is now, admittedly, but, you know, I'm 25 years into a career.
Okay.
You know, I did things that were not comfortable, were not particularly what I thought I should be doing with my life, wanted to do with my life, but I really liked eating and feeding my family.
Right.
Like, I was a big fan of that. I mean, you know, not everybody's thing worked for me. Now, because I didn't have a lot on that, because I didn't think that that meant that I was failing or that God was abandoning me or that I wasn't on my path. I just recognized that, you know, I live in a culture where it takes money to eat. And the easiest way to make money at the level that I was working at was to take jobs. And some of the jobs I liked more than others.
Right.
Right. That I could see that that's just part of the human condition.
Definitely. I feel like, you know, like if I, let's say, take a job now, I'll miss my school and then I'm not going to go back to that. You know, like missing opportunities. And you're like saying, so I'm like confused. Should I say no or yes? I mean, what do I do right now?
Well, and understand. So if you've listened to the show, you know that I'm never going to answer that question for you. Right. But what I can do is I can maybe help through some of the things that we talk about, make enough space for your thinking to settle down so that you can see your way a little more clearly. How about that?
Definitely. That sounds great.
Okay. So here's a second piece. So the first thing is, you know, to kind of accept the fact that you're a human being too. And that things sometimes will work out in ways that just work perfectly for you, and other times you will be inconvenienced by life.
100%, yeah, that happened, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, it does to everyone, but just the only problem is when we think it shouldn't, okay? So that's one. Now, here's the second thing. You said at the beginning that you're struggling to find your passion. Did I get that right?
Yes.
Right. Now, that makes it sound like your passion is this thing outside you that exists somewhere in the world that if you only knew where to look, you'd find it.
Okay. Wow. That's a big one.
Now, that isn't my experience. My experience is we can be passionate about all sorts of things. And there are definitely things that at a deeper level in our heart of hearts, we're called towards. Now, a calling is a little bit different to a passion in my model of the world. Passion is just one of the feelings that we feel. And to be honest, we feel passionate about things and then we don't and then we do. Right? No, nobody feels passionate about something all the time. You know, and if they say you do, call them up at 2 a.m. and see how that goes. Right?
Yeah.
So if we stop looking for that as if it's a thing and we just enjoy what we're doing as best we can while we're doing it, what happens is in the quieter, because we're not up in our heads trying to find our passion, it's quieter up there.
Mm-hmm.
We settle down a little. And in that settling down, once you go beyond relief, beyond the, wow, it's nice to not worry about that for a while, new ideas will start to come to you and you'll be able to hear the call a lot easier. And at times, it may be that there's nothing particularly calling to you, right? It's not like your phone I mean, this isn't a direct one-to-one metaphor, but it's not like your phone is constantly ringing and you just can't hear it. It's that it rings from time to time. And if you're quiet, you hear it and you can pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's different from chasing after the phone ringing.
100%. Wow.
And it's a lot easier, right? There's a lot less pressure on you in that world.
Right, because you let go.
Right. Yeah. And then I know I was joking when I said that the head goes on top, then the shoulders, and so on. But in terms of organizing yourself, do you see how you don't have to organize your body?
Right.
It's a self-organizing system.
Okay.
Well, my experience of the mind is that the mind is a self-organizing mechanism as well. And I would even go so far as to say that life appears to be a self-organizing mechanism as well. And the way I see that is there's an intelligence behind the system. And the intelligence behind the system, what I talk about is the principle of mind. It's got your back, right? You don't have to do that bit because it's got that bit covered.
So what you're saying is more like quiet my mind and I can hear and see what's going on. I do meditation.
Well, so hang on. You're almost hearing me. What I'm saying is when you stop trying to find your passion,
right,
trying to organize yourself and trying to have a Disney life that may or may not be possible in any given moment in the real world, your mind, you will find yourself in quieter and quieter states of mind, because that's what's natural. That's what already exists underneath the noise. And in that quiet, you will find it so obvious what to do that you might not even experience it as a decision. You might just find yourself doing it and notice with interest, oh, look what I'm doing.
I know, because you feel like you have to do something and you have to solve it. And sometimes it's just not. You just have to let it go and see it solve itself. But somehow you just have, you hold on so much to it that it's like hard to let go.
Well, so what if you just didn't hold on to it?
Okay.
Like, you can do hard.
Uh-huh.
Would you be up for that as maybe as an experiment in life, an experiment in living?
Right.
Like, how much trouble do you think you'd get into if you let go of trying to control the whole thing for a week?
I know. That's funny, but it's really, I mean, you look at it as funny, but in reality, we think we control things, and it just, we think we're going to let go for 1 second, everything is going to fall apart, but it's not like that.
No. And the fact is, we intuitively know that. But there's just a lot of influences, and there's a lot of habitual thoughts and memories that cause us to question our own clarity and wisdom. But that's okay. We can deal with that too.
Right. Right. That's a good one. Thank you so much.
It's a real pleasure.
It makes you think better, and it gives you perspective. I mean, it's amazing. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
And
thanks for
great,
phoning
beautiful
in.
Have a great, beautiful day. Thank you.
You too. You know, I always wonder when people hear a call like that, because it's almost impossible not to put yourself in the caller's shoes. In fact, I think that's probably what makes it good radio, is that you put yourself in the caller's shoes. And I hope you, when you do that, you look for your own insights, not hers. Because there's something for you in this. What we're talking about on this show, as best I can, I don't always do it. But as best I can, what I'm trying to point to are universal truths, things that are true not just about Shelley and Chris and Diane, who are the next three in the queue, but about you and me, and about our ancestors' ancestors and our children's children. We're looking at truths about the human condition, and when we can see how impersonal life is, it becomes so much easier to navigate. so much less stressful. And that comes with a feeling of relief. But then when we go beyond relief, something even cooler opens up for us. So let's go a little bit further afield, and let's go out to Santiago, Chile, and let's speak with Chris. Chris, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Well, I'm in a relationship, and we've been together for like 2.5 years, almost mm-hmm. 3. And my partner, he got moved to Chile for his work, and I want to be with him here, and I also kind of miss where I lived in California, in Santa Barbara, because I did a lot of dance and art and choreography, mm-hmm. and I just feel like I've kind of been stuck for a while, like, trying to make this decision, but not really knowing what's the right path for me, and I meditate, I do yoga, I, you know, take care of myself pretty well, but I feel a lot of kind of anxiety about this choice and like trying to make things be perfect or whatever.
Chris, are you familiar with the expression, life is what happens when you're busy making plans?
Yeah.
It strikes me that there's going to be an element of that to this conversation. You know, the fact is, from what I just gathered, you're living in Chile with your partner, and you're doing whatever you do there, right? But your experience is, or the bit of your experience that you're talking about with me, is you got a lot of thinking about whether or not you'd be better off somewhere else. Now, what that does, and it would do it for anybody, right? It's not unique to you. It's not a Chris problem. It's a people thing. Is it means that you're not really in Chile a lot of the time. And you're probably not completely with your partner a lot of the time. And that's going to leave you feeling a bit disconnected. And that feeling of disconnection is going to feed your insecurity about whether or not you're doing the right thing. Because if you were doing the right thing, surely you'd feel more connected. And so it's going to seem even more like you should be somewhere else, which is going to fuel the disconnect, which is going to fuel the insecurity, which is going to make the question seem even more important. Does that make sense? Can you see that chain in your thinking?
Wow. Yeah. Yes, definitely.
So it sounds like you've already kind of beat me to the punch, but so there's two different ways you go. You either try even harder to answer the question as if it's a really important question, or you re-presence yourself to your life, and in doing that, reconnect. And in that connection and security, your own wisdom will presence itself for you. And if there is something different to be done, it will be obvious.
Yes, definitely. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I found one, you know, dance school I like here, and it's fun, and I totally agree with what you said, like, I'm here, but I'm not here, so I do want to give it my all and try to, you know, create a life here before I kind of give up on that, because it could be really great and something I love. I love Spanish, and I love the culture, so...
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's funny. That's brilliant, Chris. Thank you. I don't want to keep you for your phone bill, but thank you so much for phoning in.
Oh yeah. You're welcome. Thank you.
So let me speak a little more to that. So, you know, one of the reasons that commitment in a relationship makes a difference, let's talk about it in that context, is if I'm committed in a relationship and there are problems, now, I know none of you have ever been in that situation, but, you know, bear with me. The kind of things that come to mind are ways of resolving those problems, ways of making things better within the relationship. That's just the natural flow of insight. That's just the way the mind works. You present it with a problem, and over the more settled down you are, the more wisdom presents you with it, with answers and solutions and possibilities. Well, if you're not committed to the relationship, then when things aren't great in the relationship, wisdom presents you with some possible possibilities around making the relationship better, but it also presents you with a bunch of other options, a bunch of escape plans, a bunch of things that might be even better than being in the relationship. And so you think when you're in that situation, well, I just can't see a way of making this work. But you can't see a way of making it work because you're looking in two directions at the same time. You're looking towards what would make it work, but you're also looking towards what might be better than making it work. Well, it's the same thing when we get it in our heads that we would be better off somewhere other than where we are, doing a different job than we're doing, in a different relationship than we're in a different career. And we follow that thought. We really get up in our heads about it and really start thinking about it. We disconnect from the present, so the present moment doesn't get a shot. Now, what's interesting is, you know, there's a quote. Bruce DeMarsico was a Jesuit. I don't know if he became a priest or if he just went through the Jesuit training, but he developed something called the option method back in the 1970s. And he had a great expression. He said, human beings are the only animals who crap in their own nests to get themselves to move out. Right? We've learned as a strategy, us humans, that if we want to move forward with our lives, we need to make our present uncomfortable. Now, that's a weird strategy. You don't see that strategy anywhere else in nature. Right? Anywhere else in nature, when it's time for a change, it just changes. You know, when it's time for the babies to leave the nest, they just push them out of the nest. When it's time to move on to new hunting grounds, there isn't a sort of a, gee, should we move to new hunting grounds? I mean, you really like these hunting grounds. I mean, gosh, we've had our nest in these hunting grounds for a while. The animals just move on to the new hunting grounds. So while it might be normal to make yourself discontented with where you are as a desire and an attempt to motivate yourself to move somewhere else, it's not natural. And it's not necessary. And what I've seen in my work consistently over time, and I just share this in the For What It's Worth column, is when people stop doing that, when you stop generating all sorts of problems in your current situation, and you start enjoying it again, if there's somewhere for you to go, you'll just go there. You're not going to get stuck where you are because you're enjoying it. You're just going to enjoy it more. And again, as with everything we talk about in this show, or everything I try to talk about in this show, it just gets easier because you're not working so hard at life. And that leaves more space for life to work through you. Let's go out to Lexington. Oh, man, I got that right. Wrong. I thought meditative was difficult. Let's go to Lexington, Kentucky and talk to Shelley. Hey, Shelley, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today besides the fact that I can't pronounce where you live?
You got to do it Lexington.
Lexington. There you go.
There you go.
Got a little more slang in there.
Now,
Lexington.
I'm
in Lexington.
You're one of us.
Yeah, all right, man.
I just want to tell you that I adore your work. I think it's incredible. Don't quite get it, but I know I do. But if that makes any sense at all.
It totally does. You know, I used to live years ago, I used to live in a house with Leonard Cohen's housekeeper, which is just an odd thing. So half the year she lived and looked after his home, and half the year she lived where I lived. And she said, she said to him once, she told me, she said, you know, Mr. Cohen, I get that your music is brilliant, but I don't really understand it. And he just looked at her and said, don't worry about it. It's just music.
So you're my Leonard Cohen.
There you go.
So, you know, this is the deal. I was just listening to one of your podcasts earlier. I teach yoga, I meditate, and all these things have been really powerful in my life. My family was kind of has these anxiety issues and rumination, which is my thing. And it's gotten better over the years. It has. But it's still there, and sometimes it can be quite powerful. And I just went through a spell last week where I was ruminating. And then from an outside source, it got better, okay? And I had this beautiful clarity. I'm a writer as well, and I sat down and I worked on my novel, and it was just like, And I know that whenever I can clear away all those thoughts, not when I can, but when all those thoughts are not present for whatever reason, it does tap me into that creativity, and it's beautiful. I'm not sitting there judging myself. I'm not worrying about things. I'm not trying to fix anything. I'm just there. And then everything else is there too.
Hmm.
My thing that I was aware of is that my rumination was about not being good enough and about the fear around that with my partner. And when my partner validated, when we had a discussion that I needed to clarify things, whenever that got clarified, then I was at peace again.
So he validated, because when you said that, I thought, he validated my low self-esteem and said, yeah, you really are crap. So that was good. So that took that off my mind. Okay, I'm with you.
Oh, I don't know which would have been better. So, you know, my question is, Michael, and I know you don't give this answer out on this, you know, but when your mind is just so used to doing this, and I think I understand what's going on, but I don't understand how to just not try to do anything to fix it.
So I have on my desk here where I do the show you remember those magic eight balls?
Yes.
Well, I have a Freudian one. It's got a picture of Freud on it. And I just shook it for you. And it said, talk about your mother. I'm gonna ignore that and go with what I was going to say. I just thought I'd check. I don't know. I don't always pick that up. But every now and again, you know, Dr. Freud's therapy ball sometimes helps. Not that time. So here's what I notice. Okay? And you can check if this is true for you. We are inordinately interested in ourselves. Like we think we matter a lot. We really care about our opinion about ourselves as human beings. And I'm not convinced that that's helpful. Because it seems to me that it stirs up so much thinking that is continually going up and down. Right? Because I'd be better off having a high opinion of myself, but if I have too high an opinion of myself, then that's bad, and that will give me a lower opinion of myself for having too high an opinion of myself. So I need to do something so I can have a high enough opinion of myself without having too high an opinion of myself. And it's kind of like, wow, no wonder there's no room for insight. And it's not, again, I think you're hearing, it's not you. I mean, that's not something you
No, I get it, because what I experienced on Monday was I had no opinion of myself. I was just there.
Yeah, what I experience is I sometimes do have an opinion about myself. I just don't care what it is. Right, okay. I don't even try to not have an opinion about myself because that takes work. Right. Sometimes I think the sun shines out of my ass, if I'm being honest. And other times I am such a dick, you would not want to know me. Now, I'm no different, right? I'm just me doing the best I can. But my opinion of me goes all over the shop. Now, if I thought that mattered, well, that would be a full-time job. Trying to live up to some ideal that I'd learned or created about how I was supposed to be.
Okay. That is my full-time job then.
Yeah. Well, so I'm going to suggest voluntary redundancy. Because the package, the redundancy package is awesome. What you get is you get peace of mind. You get higher levels of creativity and productivity. And you get a deeper connection with spirit and other people.
So what do you mean by that?
Well, that basically, in that space that's left, when you stop being up in your head caring about what you think of you, life suddenly has room to come in. The deeper mind suddenly has space to share with you. Your own wisdom is suddenly front and center instead of tucked into a corner in the back until you're done with your opinion sharing session.
Agreed.
And that's why you have those moments, and everybody has those moments, where things just flow, but they feel special because so much of our time is spent up in our head thinking about ourselves. In fact, they're the norm. They're what would be the norm if we weren't up in our heads all the time trying to figure ourselves out.
So is what you're saying is if I just didn't care what my mind was saying about me, then I'd have more of those spaces?
Uh-huh.
So it's not trying to stop my mind from doing it.
Well, have you noticed that that takes a lot of work and only works sometimes?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's like wrestling a bear sometimes.
Yeah. Well, it's actually like wrestling a bear all the time. It's just that sometimes the bear naps and we think we're winning.
Okay.
And that's the irony or the cosmic joke, or I don't know what you'd call it, but it's like all this work that we're doing to get to a quiet mind is what is keeping our mind from being quiet.
So it's the importance that I give it.
Well, it's like, look, if, you know, I sometimes use this analogy. I haven't used it on the show for a little while, but if you're in a diner and chatting with a friend and there's a TV on in the corner, right? At first, it might annoy you a little, especially if it's on a channel you don't like. But after a while, if you're having fun with your friend, you're not even going to notice that the TV's on. Now, there are also probably times where you go to the diner and your entire experience is ruined because the stupid TV was on that stupid channel. Well, that's us with our minds. It's like, look, sometimes the TV's on a stupid channel. And if we think that's important and we need to change the channel, then guess what? We're not going to be enjoying our lives. We're not going to be connecting with our friends. We're not going to be an outlet for our creativity. We're going to be caught up in an argument with a television set. And honest to God, I've never seen somebody win one.
That makes a lot of sense. And so if like, whatever, and it is hard to distinguish between those thoughts that we use throughout the day to be creative, to work, to do all those things, and then those ruminating thoughts, you know, it's like, because we have to give some of the thoughts importance.
Well, do you know what, though, Shelley? I'm going to suggest that it becomes more and more apparent when we look in that direction. Like I did an exercise. I was teaching in Denmark last week, and I did an exercise with the group where I had them hide a flip chart marker and then call out warmer, colder to me in Danish. Now, I don't speak Danish, so you can imagine that I didn't do a brilliant job of finding the marker. Now, the second that they switched to English, I found the marker in about 12 seconds because I knew what I was looking for. I knew what warmer was and what colder was. That's our job. Like if we want to take on a job, that's a good job to take on, is to get a little bit intimate with ourselves, to tune in to our own feelings and really get clearer on which feelings are taking us more towards that openness and creativity and wisdom, and which ones are indicating that we're more up in our head and arguing with the TV.
Mm-hmm.
And once you do that, you'll be amazed how quickly you start sorting.
I get it.
Very cool. Thanks for calling
in. Thank you so much.
Our real pleasure. So proof, if proof was needed, that you don't need to be able to pronounce Lexington in order to be of use. sorry, that's me. So I want to talk to you guys about a couple of things coming up. Starting next week, if you're listening to this live or on one of the early replays, so starting on the week of September 8th, we are starting two new programs over at supercoach.com, online programs. One of them is our core program, which is called Living from the Inside Out. And that's the program that I developed for people who read The Inside Out Revolution or watched the Why Aren't You Awesomer TED Talk or listened to this show and want to go deeper into the understanding. And this time around, it's being run by one of my proteges, Barbara Patterson, who's got 15 plus years experience in the corporate world and is one of the just most clear thinking teachers of these principles that I've had the privilege of working with. So that course is called Living from the Inside Out. And then simultaneous to that, for those of you who maybe are already a little more grounded in this, you've been around this work for longer, I'll be running a course at the same time, 12-week course online called Living from Mind, where we'll be looking deeper into the nature of this relationship that we can develop with spirit and with wisdom. And you can learn more about both of those at supercoach.com, and you can find the links there. Other things to tell you. Oh, Friday, next Friday, this is going to be a treat. So not tomorrow, but next Friday. We're going to be doing an evening with myself and Dr. George Pransky, who's one of my earliest and favorite mentors in this understanding. And we're doing an evening called Getting Unstuck. So if you're in the LA area, please, I think we've got about 15 seats left for people to come live, but we are also doing a virtual track so you can watch virtually and then review the video and audio afterwards. And so Getting Unstuck, and you can also find the links to that at supercoach.com. So let's go back to the phones and let's go to Boulder, Colorado and speak with April. April, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
I've been dealing with something for a couple of years now, and finally a murder trial may take place, finally. My brother killed my dad, 2 years ago, and I guess I'm just trying to figure out how to cope with the whole situation. I lost my dad in a horrible way, and obviously I lost my brother, and I feel like moving forward just with normal day-to-day life, I've kind of gotten a little bit stuck, and I just want to know what kind of coping strategies you may be able to suggest.
So, okay, let me just jump right in with, holy crap, that's got to be really, really, really hard for you. So, I that wasn't a deep statement on my part, but please know, that's I talk about life being a contact sport. Your brother murdering your father qualifies as right up there with heavy contact. So my first coping strategy, and I'm not even being funny, is break down if you need to break down. You'll put yourself back together. We are amazingly resilient. And I think sometimes we try so hard because we feel like Humpty Dumpty. We try so hard to stay on the wall. We try so hard not to lose it. We try so hard to hold it all together because we're worried that if we fall, if we let ourselves go, all the king's horses and all the king's men won't be able to put us back together again. The truth of human beings is we are innately resilient. We are made of something that is so permanent, so unshakable, so fundamental that it cannot be broken. That which can be broken is made of thought. And that's fine. Like we can have our ideas of life shattered. We can have our visions of what our future should look like shattered. But there is something inside of us that is unbreakable. And if you look towards that, it's actually easier to, and I'm not saying you have to, but it's easier to be open to falling, to be open to being overwhelmed, to be open to not knowing what to do and to feeling hard done by and to feeling screwed over and to resentment and to thoughts that you think you shouldn't think because a good person wouldn't think them and all of that stuff. Does this, can you connect to that at all? Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, some of what you said, I do understand where you're coming from, you know? I mean, that makes sense. You know, I guess there's obviously nothing can be changed, but I guess I just wonder how people move forward just with, like, understanding it. It just seems like, I think about it, I'm like, holy crap, was that a nightmare? No, this is real. Like, this is not normal. This is something that, you know, you watch on a Lifetime show or it doesn't happen to you. And it's just, I just wonder how to handle it or how to really, you know, accept it, I guess.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting because those are two different things, or three different things. So there's, how do you move forward? How do you handle it? How do you accept it? So if we start with acceptance, it's a funny thing. And April, if I say anything stupid, know that I do that sometimes, and I apologize now. Okay, I'm just getting that out of the way. I'm not planning on saying anything stupid, but I'm just kind of putting that out there.
Okay.
So. The what's interesting about acceptance is it's kind of irrelevant to everything in the universe but us, whether or not we accept what is. Right? The world is not going to... It's like accepting gravity, you know?
Yeah.
I can accept it or not, and gravity is going to still be gravity and do what gravity does. And the longer that I don't accept it, the longer that I argue with it, that I tell it that it shouldn't be that, that I believe I can fly, the more I'm going to struggle. And the moment I accept what is for what it is. Now, that's different from accepting the story. That's different from accepting the consequences that I think must emanate from this, right? There's a great saying in medicine, you know, accept the diagnosis, ignore the prognosis. Accept the facts, but you don't know what's going to come of this. You don't know, none of us do. We can make shit up, but we'll be making shit up.
Right.
So you don't have to accept the future. You just have to accept the past. Does that make sense so far?
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things that happens once you're not arguing with reality and once you're clear about what's reality and what's made up, right? You know, just, it's the only reality is what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is up for grabs. Well, then how you handle it becomes an emergent property of your moment by moment wisdom. So that same innate resilience, that same part of you that was there before you were born and will be there after you die, if that makes any sense,
mm-hmm.
that has an intelligence to it that we experience when we listen to it as wisdom or sometimes even as common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And if we let it, it will guide us, but it doesn't tell us what to do 3 months from now in a hypothetical. It can only tell us what to do now with what's on our plate now. It's real time.
Right.
And when we get ourselves into a little bit of trouble is when we try to handle what we think we're going to have to deal with in the future from where we're sitting now.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, one day at a time, cliche though it might be, has proven to be so helpful to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the reality of what we are capable of. Human beings are amazing at dealing with what's actually on their plate. But on the whole, we're terrible at dealing with what we think we're supposed to be able to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
So does that make sense?
Yeah, that does.
Okay. And then in terms of how you move forward from it, well, you don't have to. In other words, your life will continue to unfold. And at some point, people will look at you or you will take a look back and you will go, huh, look how I moved forward from this. But that's what it looks like looking back on it or looking at it from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Our experience from the inside is just an unfolding of moment by moment wisdom with a little bit of probably, you know, panic, pity, hatred, self-loathing, and anger mixed in for fun.
Right. Yeah. And then lastly, one last thing I forgot to ask was forgiveness. You know, they say, you know, if you don't forgive, then you're just going to be angry and bitter and, you know, you're just going to poison yourself. And it's like, okay, how do you really come to the conclusion to forgive, and how do you really define forgiveness, and how you don't say that what someone did was right, but that you're not going to punish yourself for what they did and just be so angry at them, you know?
Well, yeah. And I mean, you know, look, we've got like, you know, 3 minutes left, so that's easy. well, let me do my best to speak to that.
Okay.
Okay. Because in a way, when it looks the way most people talk about forgiveness, what they mean is, given that I've already judged this situation or person to be horrible, evil, and wrong,
mm-hmm.
how do I forgive it?
Right.
Well, that's kind of like saying, given that the zebras have left the barn and moved back to Africa, how do I feed them? I mean, it's too late.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you've created it as a real problem,
mm-hmm.
there are no real solutions.
Mm-hmm.
There will come a time, and I can hear it in your voice that some of this is already clear to you, where you'll see that shit happens. And that what forgiveness means in this case is being willing to allow new thought to come in, even when the old thought feels really, really, really true and really, really, really righteous.
Right.
And that will come to you, April. That's not something you have to do. You're not a bad person if it takes you a year instead of a week or a week instead of a day. Quite simply, the nature of thought, the nature of mind, is that the moment we're open to new thought begins to come through. And the experience of that new thought coming through might look like forgiveness, and it might even feel like forgiveness. But all it really is an opening up to new possibility.
Okay.
You're, I hope it doesn't sound condescending for me to say you are an incredibly brave woman, and I'm really grateful that you came on and were willing to share that with us.
Thank you,
April. All right. So we are at the end of another show, and I hope you've enjoyed it, and I certainly have. We're going to be, again, check out supercoach.com to find out about living from the inside out, living from mind, and getting unstuck. And I look forward to talking to you more next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.